All right, Caitlin and I are here, and I have found the purpose of life. But before that, Caitlin has an article about Amazon.
I do have an article about Amazon. Let me pull up. It's apparently using the wrong camera. On Zoom. That's okay though. So TechCrunch has an article talking about Amazon starting their drone delivery. So this is something in the works that I remember almost like 10 years ago. I mean, they've been talking about this forever. I thought this was an absolute pipe dream. Not because the necessarily the technical feats installed, but the bureaucratic feats necessary to get this off the ground. So the idea is that Amazon was going to start having deliveries via drone to do that last mile step of the process of getting a product from the factory, you know, to your doorstep. And that last mile is really the most logistically difficult to figure out. So traditionally, you would have things like your mail carrier, UPS, FedEx, et cetera, delivering the product to your doorstep. Which requires a huge effort. Like normally you have these big trucks with one person going, taking hundreds, if not thousands of products, you know, to the main warehouse. But then you need one person to go deliver to like seven houses. You know, it's that last mile is a big problem to deal with. And so a long time ago, Amazon said, we're looking at drones and it's going to be great. And they went on 60 Minutes and we're like, oh yeah, it's Amazon drones. It's amazing. And then nothing happened to it. And like I said, I just thought this was a bureaucratic nightmare because you have to deal with FCC, FCC rules, FAA rules. You know, this is a completely new market that no one has ever, you know, looked into before. So but apparently it's happening. It's happening in a town called Lockford, California. So they're actually going to be delivering packages using drones, supposedly automatic. Maybe it's controlled via like a feed somewhere. But the drones are going to be, you know, delivering the packages in this one town. And Amazon is saying it's working with the FAA to get permissions for the drone-based deliveries. And we'll see how this works. It looks like it's not using a quadcopter. It's using a six-rotor copter, which is very popular for payloads. So this is to be expected. And the design, according to the article, and I wish I could throw it up on the screen, looks significantly different than the original models first shown all those years ago. So they've been working on this. And like I said, it's coming. It's also important to note that even though Amazon was the one to start the ball rolling on this, it seems like their drone solutions have fallen behind other company solutions. Like I know Alphabet started Wing, which of course, once again, went nowhere because of the ridiculous bureaucracy involved in getting these drones automatically flying everywhere. I mean, it's just a bureaucratic nightmare and one that's potentially very dangerous. So we'll see.
Well, you know, you can share your screen just the old fashioned way through Zoom. You want to show that?
I could, or I could.
But this picture, it's not too obvious how many propellers there are. It's a short edge on.
Scroll down. Actually, here, let me fix this. Where's the Zoom?
Oh, I see. Four photos. Oh, here we go. Well, I can share it.
I really wish the settings in Zoom was in the Zoom application, not the little thing in the corner. That would be fantastic. There we go. Ah, there we go. Okay, here we go.
Good because I'm not having luck finding it. Good.
Yeah.
So hard to operate. Oh, there we go. Yes. Oh, that looks like a hexagon.
Yes. So you'll have to excuse my video here. There we go. Yeah. So this is what it looks like. It looks.
Oh.
There's six blades, or yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep, six blades.
And then they hang the product from a rope from the middle or something?
I would assume so, yeah. I mean, that's usually how the how these payload lifting copters work, or drones work, is that they suspend the payload below. And it looks like there's actually some sort of chute or something
Yeah.
There that maybe the product comes out of. But
Yeah.
Yeah, the drones can carry 5 pounds of payload at speeds of up to 50 miles per hour. So, and no traffic. Great,
but I'm sure there's issues like what kind of license do you need? What do you do when they collide? How do you have traffic control and all that?
Like I said, bureaucratic nightmare. And yep. These issues are not trivial, and they are important because they will collide, they will crash.
Oh, yeah.
One of these drones are flying over people's private property, which is, by the way, the airspace right over your property is still your property. Yep. And drones don't, you don't, generally don't want drones flying up with airplanes because that's an even bigger disaster. A drone crashing and falling to the ground is one thing. A drone crashing into a passenger plane,
yep,
potentially causing a fatality is another thing. So we'll see how this goes. Like I said, bureaucratic nightmare.
Yep. But I was amazed how quickly they approved self-driving cars going through San Francisco. So apparently there are ways to get around these things.
Yeah, but apparently only in specific cities, like trying to roll this out nationwide. I mean, obviously it needs to be tested somewhere, but and there's going to be holdovers too. There was, I didn't have this article. There was a article, and I forget where it was. It was somewhere in the Midwest where lawmakers are just do not like EVs. And they made a law so that if you set up a free EV charging in your business, so you get people parked there and use your business because you have the free EV, you have to also supply gas to customers, right, which is absolutely ridiculous on so many levels. Yep. First, electric charging is almost free. I mean, it's not entirely free, but it's, you just plug it. It's like a light bulb, it's not a huge expense. But also supplying gas requires ridiculous amounts of infrastructure to even like get started. Like a gas station is specifically designed not from the ground up, from below the ground up, to support holding the gas securely and safely and do all these routine inspections and stuff. And the whole thing, of course, is not that they want equity with gas vehicles. They want to make it difficult for people to have EVs because it's right, just seen as a culture war or something.
Oh, just another handout to the fossil fuel industry.
Yep.
All right. Well, anyway, I've got, so DeSantis in Florida is now trying to order his Child Protective Services to investigate parents who take their kids to drag shows. Now, I'd heard about this, hadn't paid much attention. There are drag queen story hours in like libraries where little kids come listen to stories by drag queens. And when I posted this stuff, I got a person on Twitter replying saying, well, that's terrible. That will hurt the children. I said, why will that hurt the children? They said, well, they'll be confused. They'll see like drag queens as like normal people and think maybe they would become one of them. And I think that's exactly the issue. Do you think that gay people are intrinsically horrible and children must be protected from any experience with them because they're like intrinsically poisonous, dangerous creatures, which apparently is quite a popular belief because you can't justify it. It's not like it's going to hurt them any. But anyway, this is what the Republican Party largely seems to depend upon is these culture wars. They stir up an angry bigotry, and then their crazy mobs will go nuts about it. And so the typical violent lunatics are expressing their support for this. They caught a whole bunch of white supremacists in Idaho that planned to riot at a gay pride event. And what I read from unofficial sources online is that they had a bunch of weapons and they were going to really fight people. And then Patriot Front has been exposed. Patriot Front is a neo-Nazi group, and they plan things and approve them at the top to spread posters and primarily attacking LGBTQ people, pride events and other things like this. And they did have the Proud Boys go in San Lorenzo to try to disrupt the event where the drag queens read stories to the kids. So it does seem to be an effective culture war issue for the alt-right. And DeSantis does seem to be really settling into the groove of being the next Trump by inflaming these people and making them his base. So anyway.
Right. So I saw an article about these, bigots who, a library was doing story time with these kids, and they went in and they started harassing the children, harassing the parents. And these children are just learning to read. And I guess the person doing the reading is a drag queen. Like, yeah. Who cares? And it's like, one, like, you would hope adults have the decency not to get in the way of children learning to read. I mean, come on. I mean, this goes without saying, you know, if children are learning to read, leave them alone. The other thing too, of course, is that, you know, this is not, learning to read is not traumatizing to children normally, but having a bunch of bigots show up and threaten their families totally is. And I mean, it's, there's a saying about how every accusation on the right is a confession. Every accusation is a confession. Yeah. And I mean by right, I mean like right wing extremists, not necessarily anyone who holds any sort of conservative views. But so a lot of times when, you know, like right wingers say, oh, these left wingers are doing children's propaganda, they will totally do things like make PragerU for kids and stuff like that. Like, you know, every accusation is a confession. So
yeah, well, that's absolutely true, that I would like to see kids get over hating gay people and just see them as regular people like anybody else. So you could say I'm indoctrinating them and poisoning them and making them immoral, if that's how you want to look at it.
It's a good stance to have. Most Americans, you know, don't see the issue here. You know, children, I mean, the thing is, like, drag is kind of weird. I mean, it really is just a performative thing. It's not a, like, you know, drag queens don't go around there. They usually have, like, or drag queens and kings have, you know, relatively normal, boring lives, but they like to have these, like, personas of, you know, outlandishly, you know, of these outlandish characters, which is perfect for kids. I mean, kids love that stuff. And so it totally makes sense to have, you know, children's reading time with them. But
this is essentially what Disney World is, and all the kids shows on TV with somebody dressing up in a big animal costume or something.
Yeah, exactly. So it makes total sense, but it's, you know, unfortunately, you know, bigots see people doing these performative gender things and it just hits them the wrong way. So,
yeah. All right. Well, let's go back to you with a rocket that failed.
Yeah, we had a bad rocket fail, unfortunately. So space.com has an article talking about Astra, the rocket that was carrying some like $30 million worth of payloads, including some CubeSats to track hurricanes. And things did not go well at all. So what happened? I looked at the video. It's not entirely clear, at least to me at the moment, and I haven't done a ton of research into this failure, but everything looked good at the initial launch. So it hit max Q, which is the max dynamic turbulence that the rocket goes through during liftoff, went through that just fine. And then it went to its second stage and it just seemed to kind of putter and just not work correct. And it just, I guess, fell back down. Once it was, so the way that these rockets generally get into orbit is that they kind of go up and then they kind of go at a horizontal above the Earth and then shoot out prograde, you know, in the direction of the orbit that they want. So it got up and it was going, like I said, horizontal, but it just kind of sputtered out and then kind of lost control. So I assume it was a fuel issue or something. It didn't blow up, unfortunately. Those are always the fun things to want. The fun failures of rockets is when they blow up, because that's cool. It just sort of, you know, buttered out. And we lost $30 million worth of payload, which is regrettable. And Astra said, quote unquote, we have shared our regrets with NASA and the payload team. More information will be provided after we complete a full data review. And that was on Sunday, so they will let us know what happened.
All right. Well, I've got the purpose of life, so I'm going to share this. All right, and so here it is.
The only use of time is, how do I buy more Bitcoin? But take all your money, buy Bitcoin, then take all your time, figure out how to borrow more money to buy more Bitcoin, then take all your time and figure out what you can sell to buy Bitcoin. And if you absolutely love the thing that you don't want to sell it, go mortgage your house and buy Bitcoin with it. And if you've got a business that you love because your family works for the business that's in your family for 37 years and you can't bear to sell it, mortgage it, finance it, and convert the proceeds into the hardest money on earth.
So there you have it. I hope that explains everything to you. So that is Michael Saylor, who ran this company called MicroStrategy, and he did what he said. He bought Bitcoin and he borrowed more money to buy more Bitcoin and borrowed everything he could to buy Bitcoin. And of course, Bitcoin has crashed, shrinking down to less than half of its previous value. And the people that do this margin trading, there's a margin call. When it falls to a certain percentage, you now have to pay more collateral, because the stuff you use to borrow against is no longer as valuable, and that is happening very soon. Bitcoin has fallen to $23,000, and if it falls a little bit more, he will have to pay a ton of money to shore up his collateral. Now, he claims he has a whole bunch more Bitcoin he hasn't used yet to borrow against, which seems highly unlikely, considering his philosophy of life. The alternative is he'd have to suddenly sell all his Bitcoin, which is why the when stock prices or crypto prices fall below these thresholds, they suddenly go down fast because everybody is forced to sell what it to reclaim what little value they have. So anyway, it's crypto is in really bad shape. Yesterday, two major exchanges froze withdrawals. This is the problem with using unregulated banks. They don't have enough reserve currency to pay the money that you put in there. So when a lot of people try to withdraw their money at once, they just stop trading, just like banks did in the Great Crash of 29. And so...
Wait.
Go ahead.
Aren't there like a ton of laws to prevent rent on the banks like this?
In crypto. In banks there are, yes, because of that. But crypto is not banks. That's the problem. No, if you go to a bank, we have the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and bank reserve requirements and financial disclosure forms and all that bureaucracy because of the 1929 crash. But people went into crypto to get the government out of your money. So there is none of that. So Celsius was the latest one that crashed. It was another one where you would stake money and they would promise a ridiculous amount of return, like 18%. But then, of course, they couldn't sustain that because it was just a Ponzi scheme. So when the underlying currency fell below a certain value, it just crashed. Coinbase froze trading. Binance froze trading. And then Binance gave three contradictory explanations of why they'd frozen trading within a few hours. So this is what happens. You think you're rich because the number goes up. But when you actually try to take your money out, unless you do it when other people are not taking their money out, you can't really get it. So it's been very bad for crypto. And however, the third world countries or small developing countries are investing in crypto also, hoping to get rich. So Argentina froze trading assets, and people said this means the IMF is evil, because what's going on is countries like El Salvador and Central African Republic, I think, are trying to get a lot of money from the IMF to bail out their people. But then when they get the money, they invest it in crypto, and then they switch their currency to crypto. And the IMF says, you can't make your currency crypto because it's too unreliable. It bounces up and down. That makes it crazy. How can people carry on business? And it's just a highly risky investment. So why are we giving you money to bail out your economy? And then you're just investing in more crazy risks. You're just going to lose it again. El Salvador being the real standout here, seriously moving to Bitcoin and in defiance of the rules and also trying to get money from the IMF. So it is, that's the current situation. And we'll see what happens. If Bitcoin goes back up, these people will probably all feel vindicated in this gamble. But it's looking pretty bad in El Salvador. The leader has not only had to do this, he had to make secret deals with the gangs to stop murdering people while denying that. Then when it came out, he had to arrest everybody to make it look like he'd done something against the gangs. And he took down the judges that were against him and changed the rules so he can stay in power and so on. So he seems to be just the same as the previous presidents, pretty much just a crook stealing everything and breaking the law right and left with some decoration to put on top of it, which is Bitcoin this time. So we'll see what comes of it all. But I certainly wouldn't borrow money to invest in crypto. That would be a really bad idea.
Yeah, you really have to, I can't stress this enough, but if anyone offers you a guaranteed return on an investment telling you that, you know, you should just leverage everything you own and invest in this thing, it's a scam. It's a scam. Anything that tells anyone telling you like you have a guaranteed, you know, anything that's guaranteed to get you rich quick. I mean, technically, yes, if you were to invest broadly in the stock market, over time, you would gain some money. Generally, I mean, it's a pretty safe bet. You'll generally gain some money. But, you know, if it's just like you're just going to get super rich if you just do this one thing, it's a scam.
Yep. All right. And so back to you, Caitlin, with the Linux backdoor.
Yeah, I thought this was really interesting. So let me share the article here. This is by Ars Technica. There was a new Linux malware called Symbiote. And the thing that's really interesting is that it's really hard to detect. And I thought that from someone who likes to maybe potentially write some malware from time to time, I was reading this article very closely. Because there's a lot of interesting things that this malware does that I very much like. And in fact, I may, if I were so inclined, take some of these ideas myself. So this is a standard, on the surface, this is a pretty standard Linux malware. It uses the LD preload to load a shared object file whenever an application runs. So it's not an executable in and of itself. It's just a shared object, which is sort of standard practice. If you're trying to hide malware, you hide it in a DLL or an SO file on Linux. And then it does a lot of things that make it really tough to forensics it, if that makes sense. So let me pull up the article again here. There's this part talking about forensics evasion techniques. So it lists all the running processes and sees what's running and reacts accordingly. Lists all the SO dependencies, so it knows exactly what's loaded, lists all the directory contents and hides file names and stuff like that. There's the stuff down here about UDP and TCP capture, which I thought was really interesting. We'll get into that in a second. And it also currently lists all the TCP sockets and reacts accordingly. So it takes a broad snapshot of the system and targets its behavior to make it evade common detection techniques. So what does that mean in practice? Well, there is the Berkeley packet filter, which is used by things like Wireshark to capture packets in Linux. And what this malware can do is tell any packet capturing software like tcpdump, like Wireshark, not to capture packets from this malware, which I think is awesome. That is amazing malware and anti-forensic behavior. And it really goes to show when you're doing a forensic analysis and you're doing packet captures, you should probably not have like a virtual machine to do this on. You should probably have a virtual environment. So you're not capturing the packets on the system that you're running the malware on. I never thought that was even like a thing you would really have to worry about, but here we go. In the wild, there was a piece of malware that is tampering with packet capture software. So yeah, if you're doing any sort of forensics on malware, definitely think about how you can move the malware into a more distributed environment. So you have the packet capture virtual machine connected to the machine running the malware, you know, that are completely separate so that the two never meet, never intertwine. So anyway, malware authors are also getting better as well, apparently. And what makes this really concerning is that this malware is not like a military-based payload. Apparently it was targeting banks. So this is low crime malware, not cool espionage malware, but it's advanced. It's good stuff.
Yeah. And how prevalent is it? Is it likely that people are going to find this?
It's not very prevalent as of now. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was targeting banks. It's not a widely known payload.
Yeah.
But this is what the future of malware is going to look like. This code is going to spread, and after 5 to 10 years, all malware is going to have this functionality built in.
All right. And for the last one, I was charmed to see they're putting up an Indian telescope with a spinning tub of mercury for the mirror. I've heard about these liquid mercury telescopes. It's 4 meters across, and they say this is much, much cheaper than making a standard glass mirror. And they also want to do it on the moon, which I was not aware of, where they're going to have, they can't lift all that mercury up to the moon. They're going to have a different fluid and a thin layer of silver on top of the fluid. But the point is, a spinning bucket of fluid has a naturally perfect shape, just what you want, a parabola. So they're going to use it to take repetitive pictures of the sky to look for things that change. The only problem, of course, is you can't point it. So it just looks up at one stripe of the sky as the Earth turns, and that's it. All you see is that same stripe over and over, and it varies a little bit as you wander through the year. But anyway, within that limitation, you can't beat the price. You can make a bigger telescope much cheaper. And of course, it remains optically perfect, I would suppose, unless somebody drops some contaminant into mercury, would seem like it's always going to have exactly the right shape.
And the chances of there being contaminants getting on the mercury is actually very high.
I read a story years ago where someone dropped a ham sandwich in the mercury.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that would happen.
Yeah. No, I bet that does happen. Yes, that does work. There are a lot of, it's not as technically simple as just having a liquid metal and spinning it on the moon. You have to deal with a lot of environmental factors when you do have something on the moon, for example, wild temperature swings. Yep. So of course the moon does not have an atmosphere, and it gets very hot in the sun, and then very cold at night. And so the material, and a night at the moon is not 24 hours, of course, it's a month, which is great for observing, except when it's daylight, in which case you have to wait enough a month. But during the months that you can observe, so that's half the year, you get 6 months of observing time over the course of a year. You can get some pretty neat pictures. But like I said, dealing with the giant temperature swings. What is the evaporation? You mentioned that they're using silver, but what is the melting point of silver, and what is the evaporation point of silver and or mercury? Because that could easily get evaporated in direct sunlight.
They are using, they say, ionic liquids, lightweight molten salts with low freezing points would survive lunar conditions.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it's not, like I said, it's not as simple as taking, liquid mercury or liquid. It really does the whatever they're making out of needs to be specifically designed, to operate in these harsh environments, and be liquid when it needs to be liquid, Yeah. And that could be a thing too, that it could do when it's daylight on the moon. So, half a month. Did I say it's a month of darkness? It's half a month of darkness.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, so half a month of daylight. And you could have it, spinning during when it can't take pictures, when the sun's going to obscure things. The problem, of course, you also need the motors to be able to work without any maintenance for years on end on a remote place where things might break or fail, or you might not have power, and then of course you need batteries. If it's probably gonna be solar powered, and half a month without any sunlight means that you have to have really good batteries. I mean, there's a lot of technical feats that need to be addressed before this gets into production.
Yeah. But it all sounds like good, clean fun.
Oh, absolutely. But it really goes to show that the best way currently, the easiest way, is to just throw a telescope into orbit or into like a Lagrange point or something, because that is getting stuff on the moon, and doing the, twirly, make a parabola out of spinning fluids is not a trivial exercise. Doable technically, yes, absolutely. And it'll be cool when it gets done, but it is technically impressive.
Well, that's a good point, actually. What is the huge advantage to being on the moon compared to just being in orbit that could possibly justify all that bother?
A bigger mirror.
Because you have a more stable place to put it? That would make it bigger? Well, you couldn't do that gravity thing in orbit.
Right. You can't do the gravity thing in orbit. Well, I mean, you maybe could if you had like a spinning cylinder, you know, artificial gravity. Yeah. And then spun. I mean, it would be really weird. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think you'd get the right shape.
You might, or you could just use.
Would not be uniform.
It could probably be uniform enough to work.
Yeah.
I mean, the big issue is the size. You have to fit these mirrors onto payloads, onto rockets that are generally not, you know, big enough to hold a big mirror. And of course, you have to deal with all these vibrations during liftoff, and the mirrors have to not be, you know, broken in the way that like James Webb.
Yeah.
James Webb telescope worked is that it completely unfolded. I mean, it was like a piece of origami.
Yeah.
And I mean, then they had this.
James Webb is kind of the limit. Now, how many meters across is James Webb?
Oh, good question. It's
thinking like not even 10 meters, but I'm not.
Oh, sure. Definitely not 10, six and a half meter.
Right. So, and that cost what, like $100 million or something.
Yep. And it had, and they took a month to just adjust the mirrors to get them right after unfolding. And it already got hit by a micrometeorite, by the way, the mirror.
So it might be cheaper to do it on the moon at large size.
Anything above James Webb size might be cheaper to do on the moon. I'm also thinking once there's infrastructure on the moon for something else, like, you know, just getting like a rocket base on the moon, you know, for deep space missions, you know, adding a telescope to that installation, I think would be a good idea since the infrastructure is already going to be there and you could, you know, do the mirror trick, parabola trick really easily. Yeah. But you know, like just throwing up a mission, solo mission to throw something on the moon to generate a, you know, telescope. Oh, that is tricky.
But everybody's planning to have a moon base pretty soon anyway.
Yeah, like I said, if you do it in conjunction with something else, it makes a ton more sense. So we'll see.
Okay. Well, good. Well, that's it for this one, and we'll be back on Friday.